ahead and get started. Thanks for coming to the 67th Breakfast Seminar. You can keep track of upcoming seminars on the new Microlinks website right here. And there you'll find event pages where you can read about the events and the speakers. You can leave your questions and comments in case you don't get to one today. You can post them there, and our presenter will respond. You can access presentations and screencasts when they are ready, and you'll find links to post event blogs and view a green room interview with the presenter's key takeaways. And if you don't already have an account on the new site, we encourage you to sign up for one. You can stay connected to Microlinks via Facebook and Twitter. The information's on the cover slide there. And our Microlinks team tweets live from our seminars. You can follow the conversation with hashtag MLEvents. With that, I'd like to introduce Jeff Levine.
Good morning, welcome, and thank you for coming to another breakfast seminar. Today we're going to be talking about market aggregation, and I'm assuming everybody's read the bios and the intros. Today's presentation is particularly interesting to me because in USAID, and I should start off by saying I'm with the microenterprise team, in USAID today, the administrator is challenging us to talk about learning cycles, being flexible, figuring out how to recognize that development isn't a smooth linear process, that there's bumps along the ways, that while we can all identify a goal, that over the course of a year or 2 years or 5 years, things are going to happen and we need to be flexible, we need to be able to adapt, we need to be able to take advantages of innovation and technology and figure out how to introduce those things into our work so that we can maximize what we're able to achieve with our projects and our time. And this is going to be an example of how that process was applied in the case of the Ukraine, where with small farmers, smallholder farmers, and their challenges of trying to access the market, trying to plug into an inclusive value chain, this project and the work of Meta used a style and an approach that has the possibility for us to replicate, for us to look at and talk about, I hope, in today and with the people on the webinar, about how they got to some creative results and used the process to be flexible and to incorporate change. So, again, I'm very excited, and thanks for everybody for coming. I want to introduce today's presenter. Nick Ramsing is coming from Meta. He's been with Meta in the past, in the 90s, and is back with them today. He's currently serving as a project manager and senior consultant, focusing on ag supply chains, market linkages, agricultural finance, and using his past experience also in ICT to look at innovative and technological changes that we can make. He has almost 20 years of consulting and management experience, doesn't look like a young guy, in a range of practical development areas, which is always something that we appreciate and which brings a lot of value to the work that different folks and projects are doing. He studied economics at the University of California, Davis, Boston University. You can read more about him on the web, but let's get to what he has to say and then some discussion and your questions and answers. Nick?
Great. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. I think you're good. Excellent. Can everybody hear me okay? Good stuff. Thanks for the introduction. I really appreciate it. Thanks for everybody for being here. I see some MEDA folks. I heard that there's some MEDA folks online, too, so that means nobody in MEDA is working this morning. I also brought some props, some duct tape, because I have hands that tend to move around. So if that gets to be the case, I'm going to rest for you to grab that and make sure that it gets attached. But I've been environmentally constrained here as well, so this is a good thing. I'll be sitting down here and won't be walking around the room. Just in terms of where we're going today, we're going to be looking, as Jeff said, at some of the project piece of a market aggregation situation, but how we use some iterative processes to really try to keep an understanding of the market. And we want to be able to share some of the experiences with that from our activities, but also the methodology. Where we're going to go is we'll talk a little bit about the project, the overview of it. We'll talk about the approach for a number of different slides. We'll start at a high summary piece, and then we'll step down into some smaller tools that we actually used. And then we'll talk about what's going on currently in the current state. And we'll look at a couple examples, and then we'll look at some results and some lessons learned. Look at this as a really dynamic, interactive time. So if during the course of the presentation you have a burning question, there's not something that's very clear, feel free to raise your hand and definitely try to adjust it as we go through. So what is UHDP? This is a project that is $12 million over 5 years. We are currently in year four, just finishing up year four, going into the last year. It's funded by Canadian CETA, and it's had a focus on horticulture, hence the name Ukrainian Horticulture Development Project. We're active in two oblasts, in the Autonomous Republic of Crimea and then also in Zaporozhye. We have a core target of hitting farmers that are less than 10 hectares, and we're operating in primarily table grapes, strawberries, greenhouse vegetables, and a couple other areas in terms of horticulture as well. There's a number of focus areas for us as we've started to launch off and have been working. There's been a lot of extension services that have dealt with production techniques, as well as some fair and trade shows, trying to link people together and be able to show what's happening in different parts of the market. There's some technology pieces we've worked with cold storage, with greenhouse, improved greenhouses, with weather stations and crop models, and then also with some ICT reporting as well. There's an element of financial services to what we do as well. We'll touch on it briefly a little bit today. And the big one that we're going to talk about today is that the market access and dealing with some of the aggregation. So just in terms of this, there's a lot of assumptions built into this particular slide. This is really meant to be a high-level summary in terms of painting a picture of an understanding. You've seen a lot of this before. There's nothing necessarily completely new in this particular piece. It's really value chain analysis. So the whole idea of being able to analyze a particular market, being able to design a particular intervention, and then be able to implement it. As you look at this, it looks fairly waterfall, right? We have phases of moving to different things. What we've tried to do is really breed back feedback loops in the midst of that. We're actually cycling through these things and asking some questions as we go through the project. Amita has a lot of experience in this area. We've been doing this for a number of different years. We have some standard toolkits that are up in the corner there. We'll leverage those and we'll tailor those for different pieces. In the bottom left of that, you'll start to see some ideas of some key components that we're going to go through. And it's going through the analyzing, going through an understanding, and saying really what is the business market challenge in the midst of this. And the use of being asked why five different times, getting down to that root cause, what's truly the matter that's going on in the midst of that? What are people saying through the focus groups? What are happening through different interviews? What's happening through data that one might uncover? In the midst of that, coming up with the design, one of the things that Mita really focuses on is what is the viable business solution in the midst of this? Not creating a project itself that is necessarily not sustainable, not working with people that are not necessarily going to be ongoing concerns, but really in the midst of that, really focusing on the business solution. So in our understanding of trying to frame that market, we spend time with a value chain mapping, and we also use something called a causal map. We'll get to that in a moment. Stepping into the implementation then, we start with a model, with our understanding, with our assumptions of the market, and we go out and we try to test that. We start with standard hypothesis. If this, then that, and how do we actually test it? We really execute that with the implementing partners, and as Jeff said, really what we're trying to do is trying to adapt. In the midst of a five-year project, all sorts of different things happen, and a lot of things start to change in the midst of that. So looking at a couple of those tools, this is an idea of a causal map. Just real quickly, is anybody familiar with mapping techniques generally? Just raise of hands. Okay, so this is familiar to some folks. This is really taking a look at your assumptions and trying to draw influences to these different assumptions. So if at the end point is to try to increase or make improved market options and revenues for smallholder farmers, we need to step back and say, how do we get there? What are some different paths that we need to have? So we're starting off and saying, well, we need to have an agribusiness orientation. How do we do that? Working with bank transactions instead of just cash, working with trade documents in order to access different market pieces. Got to link to traders, right? Get an understanding of what the end market is. So that dotted line coming back to the understand the market desires is key. So what we're doing in this is trying to get a notional understanding of what's happening. And this tool is important for us, for our team, and also for our implementers, because it gives us something to talk about together. What is our understanding of the drivers in the market? What are the drivers in terms of our solution? So the idea of being use a graphical tool, you take language out of it, you take excessive words out of it, and you put a graphical tool, a picture that everybody can look at and dialogue about, and be able to say, no, I don't think it's so much that, I think it's this. So being able to iterate through this particular tool set and this graphic is really important. As you go down and get further information, you can come back to this and revisit this over time. So again, notional here. Now taking that notional idea and placing it within the market environment and the overall systems that exist. So the markets exist in a larger context, right? You have social issues that are going on in the midst of it. You have political issues and influence in the midst of it. And being able to understand those feedbacks in the midst of that are highly important. This is really what ends up happening in terms of tailoring something to the specific context and things that are around that. So in our particular area, in Ukraine, we were dealing issues with some gender bias and some ethnic bias, particularly in Crimea. There's an issue with land sale moratorium. So that really affects what's happening in terms of people's willingness to invest in different places. Access to finance was a constraint. Land rights are a bit of an issue as well. There are commodity markets that do exist in a number of different areas, but not at the level where we were at. So all these different factors, being able to ask the why, being able to understand in the midst of that and get to a point of understanding what the drivers are, and then being able to go back and reinforce once again what is our notional understanding of what's happening. Okay? So taking that to the next point, that then sets up some hypothesis for us. What's the market challenge? What really are the differences here? So in this one area that we're talking about with market aggregation, we really saw the issue of market access as being a challenge for a lot of these small shareholder farmers. So in the bottom there, you see the farmer. You see their own production. There's a lot of it that's used for household consumption, and then they'll take the excess and they'll take it to the roadside. So on the local markets that's happening, really what's happening there is you sell the excess. There's low volume. There's high transaction costs for any trader that might actually come and look to interact with them. There's a huge quality variance in the midst of that product. It's cash-oriented, and you're not necessarily dealing with a registered business entity, right? People are looking to stay under some of the tax issues and things such as that. But to link into the higher-value markets, where it really is an agribusiness market-oriented piece, transactions need to be sensitive to costs. So traders are going to be looking at larger volume, and they're going to look at certain quality in the midst of this as well. They're also wanting to engage in bank wire transactions as well. They don't want to deal with a lot of cash. They have to move from one part of the country to another part of the country. They don't want to carry cash with them. They're also having, because they're traveling, needing to carry documentation with them. A certificate of origin is really important, especially as you're starting to get into the export market, into Moscow, and into some of the supermarkets as well. These markets want to know where the produce actually came from. And packaging is important. If you're used to dealing with banana boxes where you can put some of the lower quality pieces at the bottom and some nicer pieces on top and hide some of that and increase the weight, traders are looking to say, well, I want to make sure that what I'm buying, all of it is good. So the packaging of that allows them to look down inside and actually see what's the value of the overall commodity. So there's a lot of barriers to entry into access in the midst of that for a lot of these smallholder farmers. How do they get from one market to the next market? Really is a jump. So as we start to look at this, and we started with our notional idea with a causal map, one piece that Jeff alluded to as we've looked into this is to be able to say, how do we iterate from an idea through a design into prototyping something and then bringing that back and actually implementing it? So whenever you start off in the particular market, you don't necessarily know where you're going to end at the end. You have an idea, you have a strategy, you have a direction, but the first step is many times dependent on what's going on in the midst of this. So for us, it really is an issue of looking back and saying, well, what's the voice of the customer? In the focus groups and the interaction with the traders and the interaction with the smallholder farmers, what are they saying? How are they perceiving these different pieces? How do they view the world in the midst of this? And that allows us together work with one another to design some interventions. And again, using those tools of the causal map, that graphical piece is highly valuable to work with our facilitating partners to get an idea of what's driving in the market. And as we iterate further and further in the midst of this, it allows us to build up a bit more of a model that we can use in a spreadsheet or even in a linear regression to go ahead and test, do we actually have this right from some survey data? So that leads us into prototyping, it leads us into testing experiments, and it leads us to leverage M&E, so people going out and doing some surveys and bringing information back in the midst of this, and that whole cycle of being able to learn and adapt. And we find something that actually has traction, then we can implement it and extend it and scale it. So the purpose of this really is an iterative process that allows one to fail quickly and fail small. Right? We don't want to start moving down a huge path and find out that was not the way to go, and we spent all this time and effort and money. We failed big. We want to really fail quickly so we learn quickly, and we want to fail small so we can build further. There's also an idea of learning in the midst of this. The idea of learning about really has to do with data. That's the survey pieces. But learning from the market is really stepping down in and emphasizing that voice of the customer piece and really understanding where they're coming from. And then it's exciting then when you can take it to the next level and actually get to the point where everyone is learning with one another. There's the experience of joint learning that happens both with the traders, the smaller farmers, the key facilitating partners. People get an understanding in the midst of this. And the key piece to this, there's been a lot of discussion about design thinking really from 2008 and on. This is really coming out of a group called IDEO and a number of design firms in the midst of this. And there's been a frustration with some of the business community in terms of taking this up, because the business community takes this and they go, oh, it's a process. Well, it's not just a process. It's actual perspective and way of thinking. The whole issue of prototyping and moving through iterative steps is really a perspective of adopting a new way of thinking as you're walking into the middle of it. Okay? So stepping into where we're at right now, as you think at the bottom left-hand side of this graph, it really is the starting point. We have on the bottom, the X horizontal there, is the access to market, and on the vertical is looking at increasing capabilities and increasing assets. So if you're starting at the intersection of that and you're moving forward and you're following that iterative process, there's some first steps in terms of where we need to go. And that first steps is really interacting, understanding what the market wants, understanding what people's constraints are, and building solutions into the midst of that. Well, stage one for us was really about creating some informal alliances. So this was about taking advantage of lead farmers that were actually in the market that had connections to traders, and being able to build on that relationship and be able to feed back, again, that understanding of market expectations back to other people who had not participated in that market. The next step in that started to say, well, how do we deal with some of these additional constraints that are there? Right? How do we end up solving some of these things? So part of that had to do with adopting new technologies. So if you're in the horticulture market and you're dealing with strawberries, rot is an issue. So being able to create cold storage facilities and being able to put those out into the actual farmer space was really important for the farmers in the midst of that and for the lead farmers in terms of aggregation. Now, the cold storage facilities were interesting because they were not something that existed in that particular market. So it was a new piece. It was a matter of going out and finding suppliers and people to think conceptually about how to do this, taking a container, putting refrigeration on it, insulating it, and then taking it out to lead farmers and saying, hey, what do you think? How is this working for you? And being able to iterate that particular design and that particular product for different farmers. So there's a variety of different cold storage units that exist out there, each one getting better. It was an interactive with what's going on with the power constraints in the midst of it, what's going on in terms of what the traders were looking at in terms of quality, and what the actual business concern was from the lead farmers. Same with greenhouses. There's a lot of greenhouses that are created from wood. Really difficult to stretch high-grade plastic across that. And so looking at an improved greenhouses using metal, again, something that was new for a lot of these people. Stepping in with suppliers who had not had experience in the midst of this, supplying a bit of a grant piece to go ahead and stimulate some of that, them being able to take that, apply that in the field, and then being able to leverage some of those as demonstration units. So for us, we're really interested to see what actually happens as we're coming out of this really difficult winter that Ukraine had, and to have people actually look back and say, wow, well, what was the performance of the strawberries under these improved greenhouses versus some of the other ones as well? And then weather stations as well. In the midst of that as well, as they're interacting with the traders, so I mentioned the issue about packaging and grading of quality. So there was a lot of learning in the midst of that, being able to put things together the way that the market was expecting it. And that then led to a stage two piece. And we at the very beginning didn't necessarily see the stage two in terms of where we're heading, but through the iterative design piece and looking forward, we could start to see this unfolding and starting to move some of the market actors and be able to say, what do you think actually about creating a business entity? So that was then unraveling a lot of the different issues. What does that mean in terms of these particular producers and these particular lead farmers in the midst of this? Creating commercial business, dealing with actual bank-wired transactions, and then actually adapting some of the packaging and working in the midst of that as well. So that's where we're at today. There's a number of different folks that are still at the informal stage, and there's folks that have moved on to more of an ag business perspective. It's going to be interesting to see where we actually head in terms of a stage three as we go further in the midst of that. So some examples. One is that the Golden Valley Cooperative in Zaporozhye, when they originally started, there was 10 farmers with 10 different perceptions. They wanted to do some aggregation, but because they had different quality expectations and they had different understanding of how to do business, things really didn't work well for them. The other piece as well is they weren't documenting anything. They didn't have documents to give to traders, and they weren't cash-based. So in interacting with them, started a facilitation with the traders, shared some expectations back and forth. We looked at some legal options for them in terms of how they actually might form in the midst of that and facilitated that discussion. Out of that, three friends together decided to create an actual business entity, in this case a co-op. We came alongside, provided some additional pieces with a business plan, interacted in terms of management and marketing, talked about a few of the other issues that they were challenged with. They ended up installing some cold storage units in the midst of that. They upgraded their storage areas outside of the cold storage piece. They made some decisions about improvements with packaging. This wasn't just linear. This was through dialogues and additional transactions with the different traders in the midst of this. To the point where now you can actually see banana boxes in the back corner of there, and you also see some other improved packaging in the front. The structure around that is something that they invested in themselves. You can see the back end of one of the cold storage units on the left. But now they're at a point where there's 10 of them together. They're providing business services to smallholder farmers around them that bring their produce into a particular area. People are paid. The produce is stored, depending on what type it is, in a cold storage unit or another particular place, and they've worked out specific times where traders can come, expecting certain volume, expecting certain packaging, expecting certain grading, so it's much easier now for the traders. They show up, load their trucks, move on to market, reduced amount of time, overall reduced cost of transaction to the trader as well. So it's been an interesting growth with them, and they're quite dynamic, and they're actually exploring a little bit more about where they go in the future of this. Key point in the midst of this as well is that by being a co-op, an actual business entity, now they have bank wires. They have a bank account they can wire back and forth. They have certified documents they can work with as well. Looking in the Crimea, here's a bit of a smaller organization. Some challenges they had were some gender and ethnic bias. These were Tartars in the midst of Crimea. They were women, and they were competing in herbal medicines. One of the challenges they had is they were going out into the fields that were non-cultivated areas and basically harvesting what was growing in the midst of that and then trying to take that and sell. So in their particular place, looking to go ahead and improve some of their storage, improve some of their cultivations, and getting an idea of what their organization was, where they wanted to go in the midst of that. Again, the business planning, the agribusiness perspective, trying to extend some of their trading links in the midst of that, link them up with further markets in the midst of that, improving their storage. There was a number of grants that were provided in terms of tillers and some other pieces just to test and see what was going on, how would that actually affect them and interact with them. And now they're actually taking some cultivation to their homes and using those tillers in the home areas, cultivating close to their families where they can watch their children. They've invested in a tractor and in a truck, which actually allows them to go out and pick up from the homes rather than necessarily everybody picking up as well. So, again, the specific dynamics of their household and their children. And they've improved their storage, which looks entirely different than the other storage that you've seen from the other place as well. Okay. So some results. Just real quickly, in terms of aggregating and interacting, there's about 2,500 clients that are grouped in these clusters. We have about 5,500 clients overall, and again, operating in those two different regions and clustering around those particular areas. Last year, 2011, they did overall aggregation that's valued about $7.8 million. That came from a variety of different crop types. Volume in terms of that, it's the inner part of that donut, was about 3,100 tons. And then and the value, again, 7.8 million. The majority of that was greenhouse vegetables. That there's a number in terms of table grapes, medicinal herbs, and also in terms of strawberries as well. So looking back at this, one of the things we did in our last M&E survey was to ask a number of different questions. And these were two that I thought were quite interesting. The first one really asks people a perception question. With aggregation, do you believe that you got a better price? And the graphing in that is really interesting, right? Some people are saying, well, about the same. Some people got higher. Some people, well, I think I got lower. But really, looking at that graph, there's no perceptual difference in terms of people's perception of whether or not they received a better price through aggregation. And you look at the reported data coming back from all these different areas, leads into question two, well, was there a revenue increase? And using analysis of variance, we looked at the population that did not aggregate versus the population that did aggregate, and there was a huge statistical difference between those that did aggregate versus those that did not. Those that aggregated vastly improved their overall revenue than those that did not aggregate. Okay, so you look at this and you scratch your head and you go, okay, well, what's going on here? So I toss this out to everybody, really in terms of a question. What should this lead us to? You've seen a bit of that iterative design. You've been hearing causal maps. Looking at this data and thinking back to this whole issue, where would this take us back? Any ideas what we would do with those two perception pieces? This should lead us back to the dynamic questions of why, right? What is going on in the midst of this? This should lead us probably back to some focus groups as well. Revenue is a function of what? Revenue is a function of price and quantity. So in the midst of that, one of the questions we can explore further was, well, if people are in a smallholder farmer situation and they're selling their excess to local markets, we know there's a lot of waste in the local markets. There's a lot of waste that gets carried out in the roadside stands. But if they're actually taking that and aggregating it and selling it through consolidated point of sales, there's going to be probably more volume that's actually passing through as well. But this is something where we can take and step back in, back to that iterative loop, and say, what's going on here? Being able to go back and follow it with people specifically, with some focus groups, and explore these questions a little bit more so that it leads, again, to further design. It leads possibly, in some cases, to be able to say, people who aggregate actually are better off. And that would lead us to a point of extension, reaching out and trying to figure out how do we bring other people into aggregation situations. Okay, so that whole piece of learning, asking the questions, adapting some of the different pieces, working the promotion back in the midst of this again, how is the market interacting in the midst of it? In terms of just some of the lessons learned in the midst of this, just really emphasis on terms of learning and understanding and then broadcasting that out to people, right? Listening to the voice of the customer. This goes back to some of the questions that you were asking in terms of the business viability of this. Putting something out that people in the market are saying, we're really not interested in that, doesn't help anybody. So why cold storage? Cold storage because traders are saying we really want to have a better product. We want to make sure that when we show up, something has been preserved. So that's a demand piece. That's a market driven from the end market coming back and saying we need to make sure that strawberries and other pieces actually are preserved in the midst of that. Leading to what? Leading to appropriate cold storage. So the first one's coming through, it's okay, not that great. How do we do that again? Pushing that out further in the midst of that. So really responding to those market, end market demands. Looking at a viable business model. So this goes back to this as well. Not just from a project perspective, but making sure that when you're actually looking within design, what is the ongoing concern and what is the viable business model for those different entities that are there and how they can make actual investment decisions in the midst of that. So that takes you back to your crop modeling. That takes you back to your business planning. That takes you back to, great idea. When can you actually afford to invest in that particular piece? Are there things that you might want to do a little bit beforehand? And that consultative approach of interacting and working with groups, particularly the group that I mentioned from Crimea, help them think, we've got some great big plans, but we can't get there yet. We need to take some other steps to invest to make sure that we're making that linkage that get us to where we need to go, but we need a different foundation to start with. The prototyping and testing, huge with some of those new technologies, being able to demonstrate in the midst of that, the concept of learning, the idea, again, fail quickly, fail small. And then the whole emphasis of being able to use an innovation fund in the midst of this, and this is one where I really credit CETA with the midst of this, being able to give us a fairly large-sized innovation fund where we could use money to test. So we have the delivery piece in the midst of this, but being able to come back and be able to leverage that, having the flexibility of a fund to be able to say, we're not going to use a lot in year one and year two. We'll use more in year three. What's going on year four? And looking into year five, we're also looking in terms of what we actually might use in some of that. So that innovation fund provided us some flexibility with what to test, when to test it, and not to have the pressure of saying, oh, you've got to expense a lot of this right now in year three. It allowed us to go ahead and continue to use some of that funding and later in the project as well. So the idea of then getting to scale, how do you create demand? How do you test quickly? How do you then leverage particular demand pieces for those different areas?